Blog Talk Radio.
This is Ivan Koda, the legendary. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio, the very best radio listening.
All right, thank you very much, Ivan. Welcome to another edition of Balls Count Radio. I am your host for the day, Andrew Carluck, flying solo right now. Host JT Evans is on his way out to a wrestling event, so we wish him the best of luck there. We're scheduled to be joined by Dusty Wolf today, so we'll try to get him online in a few minutes. And I just want to briefly hit first to start with the it was a really rough day yesterday in the world of wrestling. We had 3 deaths yesterday, which is definitely not been a good month for our fellow brothers. We lost, and sisters for that matter, because we lost Lena Vachon. We lost Tony Bourne, Northwest wrestling legend, who was also famous for being the father of the original Doink the Clown, Matt Bourne. And we also lost a Japanese wrestling legend, Anton Giesnick. And we'll go to a commercial right now, so I believe we have Dusty Rhodes, Dusty Wolf calling in.
Hey, this is Brother D-Law from TNA Wrestling. And you know something? When you're out there and you're thinking about choosing a wrestling school that really benefits you, that you want to see progress, and at the end of the day, you're going to feel happy about what you're doing, well, Team 3 Academy is just the place. Team 3 Academy offers you everything that you could possibly want in a wrestling school. It offers you old school rules with the new school tools. Team 3 Academy will offer you the best there is in teaching how to do professional wrestling. Contact us, sure, to make it happen for you. Testify.
Okay, we're getting Dusty Wolf on the line right now. Apologies for that.
Oh.
Hey, Dusty.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry about that.
So here
we're on the air right now, and we're going to go ahead and get started. Okay. That's all right. We have a couple of just kind of standard questions, sort of what we ask everybody, but we also have some questions that are Right, basically, based on your career. My first question is, growing up, were you a wrestling fan? And if so, who were some of your favorites?
Oh, yeah, growing up, definitely. Favorites? Funk. Both Funks, more territory. Bastine, Murdoch, Benny Hunks. Those are pretty much the guys I grew up with. Actually, you know, I was wondering, wanting to see what they were up to next, that sort of thing.
So you're a real fan of the Texas area growing up?
Well, I'm Texas.
Yeah.
I was in a place where I had one of the earliest forms of cable, and on a weekend I could see the Wichita Falls tape, Dallas tape, and the Amarillo tape in the same weekend.
Oh, wow. Now,
yeah, pretty good for a wrestling fan.
Yeah,
pretty
definitely.
For a kid.
Now, was... being a professional wrestler, was that your first career choice?
Was that what?
Was wrestling your first career choice?
No, I didn't know exactly what I did if I had been able to live the childhood dreams, I'd have been a baseball player. But as far as actual choice careers, that sort of thing, yeah, who knows what direction anything's going to take you. I really hadn't gotten old enough and done enough to start having all those kinds of plans and schemes and all that to go home.
So growing up, as a child, you were a big baseball fan. That was kind of what you sort of wanted to do?
I played baseball. I was a fair to middling baseball player. I was probably not as good as I'd like to think I was, but I was better than a lot of the others around me. And had I been given opportunities to work with some guys that really knew what they were doing, and when it comes to coaching and so on, who knows? I may have reached the limits sooner than I wanted to, but there was a little potential there. Yeah, I wanted to give it a try.
Right. And I guess you were saying you grew up, one of the guys you really enjoyed watching was Dick Murdoch, and you later got to work with him, so we'll hit on that in a little bit.
It ended up being kind of like a surrogate dad to me the last 10-12 years of my life.
Okay. Now, at the time where you were in training, the training in wrestling was a lot different than it is today. Can you kind of describe a little bit what your training was like?
Well, in those days, you didn't show up with money in your pocket and a payment plan, and you too can be a wrestler. We don't care if you're 5'1" or 600 pounds. You know, it was none of that. There was no cookie cutter training schools with diplomas and all that other. You showed if you could find somebody that would work with you, they would stretch you, see what you could do as far as legitimate wrestling. Whether they were any good or not, they knew a little more than you did, usually, unless you came out of the amateurs. Just out of self-defense, you know, just going back, you're talking like 82, for me when I started training, actually before that time, 80, 81. You know, the older guys, they reached back into the 50s, which you still had, a fair amount of guys that could handle themselves. So self-defense, just knowing some. And they would test you on that, and then you were taking bumps on mats on the floors and switching in and out of some holes, that sort of thing. And there was nothing like it is today. It was they actually tried to teach you something instead of, 2 weeks later we got to do a high spots and this is going to be your gimmick and we're going to do this, we need to do that. Nothing like that. It was if you make it, now you're going to do jobs and now you're going to, if you're lucky, get to do jobs and learn how to do some work now.
Yeah, and I know in those days a lot of times people would be toiling around the territories for years before a lot of people really knew much about them. Sorry, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, that was just the way it was. As long as you could make a living doing what you want to do, it was really difficult to complain about staying busy and making a living. You may have wanted to make more, because of the higher card, obviously. But, like anything else, there was, pecking orders, and there was clicks, and so forth and so on. But sometimes it could take a little while.
Well, sometimes I think that the guys today don't have the same appreciation for it as guys from your era, because they didn't spend that time. You have certain guys who go through contests and all this, and all those schools that... they don't have that 5 to 10 years of just sort of being in the territory that they did in your area.
Well, there's no territory to go to.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no territory to go to. There's no place to learn. Schools are the worst thing ever in the wrestling business, and they spit out guys. I say it again. This is the only industry I've ever seen that, even though we know we have too many parks, they still keep spitting the parts out.
Now, we have a caller on the line.
I say, that's the business of the wrestling industry. Can't make money trying to sell tickets, so they make money off selling spots in the wrestling schools. That's where the money's being made. There's no business left. So, as far as the guys don't have an opportunity, no, they don't. They're not ever coming back, unfortunately.
Yeah, now, we have a caller on the line from the area code 405, so I'm going to go ahead and put them on. Hello, caller from 405, on the air.
Okay.
Hello, caller, are you there? Okay, just not. All right, now, my next question is a perfect segue, because we're talking about the territories, and one of your first breaks was working for Joe Blanchard in Southwest Championship Wrestling. Do you have any memories of work for Joe?
Joe was okay. Looking back on what I know now, Joe was an outlaw, which is probably part of the reason I liked him then and didn't realize why I liked him. But Joe was also one of the more fair guys. We didn't ever get rich in a territory like this, in San Antonio, where it's South Texas. That was not a wrestling traditional area. But we were busy, and he paid about as fair as anybody did, considering what he had to pay with, and the size of the town, the population, and the general population of the whole area, you know, corrupt to San Antonio, Austin, that sort of thing. Joe was one of those. If you work hard, he rewarded you. He kept you busy. He knew what he could do. He find work when he's trying to move on, that sort of thing. He was one of the good ones.
Now, shortly after, when you left, or shortly after you left Southwest Championship Wrestling, you went to Memphis, and you were actually part of the first team known as the Hollywood Blondes, teaming with Ken Timms, and that was under Jerry Jarrett. Do you have any memories of Jerry Jarrett?
Oh, God, I don't think anybody could go to that place and not be scarred, good or bad. The territory itself is great, you know, as far as the wrestling fans and the way they enjoy the wrestling and react to the wrestling and, you know, like having their wrestling for, you know, in the town. Just wrestling fans, like what we always, the younger guys see them on YouTube, you know, jumping up and down, hitting the ring. That's what you had there. As far as dealing with Lawler, Jared himself wasn't too bad to deal with. Lawler was a pain in the ass. I just, you know, just be blunt about it. He was a pain in the ass to deal with. And in some way, he had reason. He had carried that when I was 84. He had carried, for the most part, 10 years, he'd carried that territory. Whatever money it made was pretty much due to him in some fashion or form. And he knew it, and you paid for it.
We're actually going to have Jerry on the show in a couple of weeks, so see if he has anything to say about that. Now, we're going to try, I guess, our caller's back on the line, so we're going to see if we can get them through. So, hello, caller, are you there? Caller from the 405, are you on the, can you hear me? Okay. I guess maybe their phone's on me now, but I don't know. I'll try back there in a little bit. Now, you worked for Joseph Oldie in ICW, where you feuded with Ox Baker. What was Ox like in the ring? I've always heard he's kind of stiff.
No, I never actually worked against Ox. Anything I ever did as far as getting around with Ox, somehow or another, I was like the young kid that he conned into doing his dirty work, and I was one who was, you know, jumping in there and taking an ass whipping while he was doing whatever his angle was with, you know, Idol or whoever it might have been at the time. So, but, yeah, Ox was just a big old snug. You could tell he was snug. Standing next to the ring watching him. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. Now, when you were in Florida, you also worked with the Guerreros. How were they in the ring? And, you know, do you have any special fond memories of them?
They're tremendous. That whole family is just tremendous workers. There's just no way around it. I mean, it shows every time you see them in the ring. They're not a bad worker. They're not one of the bunch. A guy like Hector, he actually gets a bad rap sometimes for some of the gimmicks he's been saddled with, just trying to make sure he paid the bills and stayed busy. But, you know, Hector was probably one of the most underappreciated guys around.
I always thought it was uncanny how Hector and Eddie Guerrero looked almost identical.
Yeah, they did. And they're great workers. I mean, you can't say enough about their talent. Well, I can't, you know.
No, definitely.
I don't know how to say anything beyond that. They were just that great.
Now, also, in the early part of your career, you teamed with Tim Horner a lot. Do you have any memories of working with Tim? I mean, I think a lot of the more modern fans know him as an enhancement talent from WCW.
Tim was a good guy. Another one I couldn't tell you exactly what kept him from going further, but he could have done so much more. Just for whatever reason, it didn't happen.
Okay, you also at one point worked for Carlos Colon in Puerto Rico. We've got a lot of people on over the months who've worked with Carlos, and there's a lot of differing opinions of him and working in Puerto Rico. How was your experience down there?
That's another place that the territory itself as far as the travel and towns and fans, whatever. It's great. The office is what ruins it. You got good cop, bad cop going on him in Topeka. I don't even know if Topeka's still part of the office anymore, but when I would be in and out, he was half owner, and he was the front guy for all the everything that would go down, and he was the one that would take all the blame for the boys getting mistreated, and Carlos would just smile at you, well, I'll check with Joe Hink and see what's going on, and nothing ever got done. That's one of those places that, once again, their greed killed the goose and delayed the golden egg, so to speak.
A lot of guys like Ric Flair said that there was times there where they weren't sure if they'd get out of the arena with their lives. Did you ever experience anything like that?
The last time, I don't know if it was that drastic. Hindsight's always different than the moment. But I had some serious words with Jovica in the locker room the last night I was there. He shorted me on my anniversary payday. He put his finger in my face. I retaliated. I got home on the next flight home. Literally the next flight home. Next morning. I knew they weren't above doing, doing something to the boys. Other than that, no, I never worried about that with the office itself. But I knew then, at that point, that I had better look out after myself because nobody else was watching.
And you also went and worked for World Class Championship Wrestling. Now, I'm sure for a guy like you growing up in Texas, that was like the mecca, working for Fritz Von Erich. What were your thoughts on the Von Erich family as a whole? Did the boys ever kind of fit the stereotype that they've had that promoters seem to have had in the past of like the spoiled promoters kids sort of thing?
To an extent, yeah, I lied for them and said they didn't. To an extent, Kerry was not as bad as you would think when you talk about that stereotype, promoter's kid, et cetera. Kevin was. Mike wasn't. I really didn't know Chris. Faded it past before I had a chance to really know him beyond hello. So, on the two ends, it would be unfair for me to speak about those two. But as far as the three in the middle, Kevin definitely, the other two, no. And they had their moments, but it wasn't like they knew who they were and used it sort of situation.
Now, me personally, when I was growing up, I watched World Class on TV, and one of my favorites was Gino Hernandez. And I just wanted to get some of your memories with him. Did you feel that, do you kind of agree with the experts who say he could have been one of the all-time greats if it weren't for the Demons?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt. He was big enough to work even, the big man territory, so to speak. But he wasn't so big he couldn't work in a smaller man's territory, which you did have him in those days. In the ring talent, he had more than he showed a lot of times. Whenever he would get in front of the camera, the charisma was there. He just oozed out of it. He was one of those that made you say, look at me. And no doubt in my mind, Gino could have been one of those that we talk about on the Alzheimer's if he had lived past, 28, 29, whatever it was.
Well, what are your thoughts on the recent passing of Skandor Akbar? Do you have a memory or two about Skandor you want to share?
We didn't always get along all through the years. We really didn't. As time went on, we did. And a lot of that had to do with Akbar was the kind of guy that was going to make sure Akbar had a job. And that means that Akbar was usually the office stooge. And I don't say that in a bad way today. There was a time where I hated the stooges because that was just my nature. I didn't understand why you had to be a stooge to do your job. Either you were capable or you weren't. And as I got older and I see how life itself works, Akbar took care of Akbar. And having said that, there's no doubt the man was over this direction as far as, Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma. The places he was known for, the places he was famous for, there's a reason. He was a heat machine when it came time to be Akbar and be that dastardly bastard that brought in Devastation Incorporated to get rid of the Von Erich or get rid of Danny Hotch or get rid of Bill Watts or whoever it was, the Junkyard Dog, you know, whoever it was at the moment that they had the angle with. He was a heat machine when it came to that. He did his job and did it well.
Now, I was just curious, if you ever saw any of the documentaries on World Class, such as the one that WWE put out or the one done by Big Vision Video? And if so, what were your thoughts of some of the comments that were made in them?
Are you talking about the videos?
Yes.
No, I haven't seen them.
Okay.
I've heard different bits and pieces and, you know, other people's opinions, so anything I would say would be based on that, which, that's not really fair, because I would have seen some of what was being talked about and might have a completely different opinion. But I heard that a couple of them were pretty fair, pretty accurate. I don't know which one of the title of it, but the one where they showed Kevin up in the auditorium after it had fallen apart and it was getting ready to be demolished. I heard that one was pretty accurate.
Yeah, that was a really good one. That was Heroes of World Class. I enjoyed that quite
a bit. I heard that one came from the truth.
Now, we touched
I'm going to recommend one recommendation, that would be the one.
Yeah, I'd definitely recommend that to anyone who, even if they didn't know about World Class, to get the story of what it was like. The one advantage I felt that the WWE's one had is they have the video footage to go along with it.
Right.
Now, we talked just briefly about it a few minutes ago, but can you give some of your memories of the late Dick Murdoch?
He was great. He was difficult to get along with. Some people didn't like him, and I know why. Because Dickie told you what he thought. And even if he was wrong, that was still what he thought. And by God, he was sticking to it. But that's part of the reason that I thought so much of him. Because I've always appreciated that out of a person. I'd rather hear someone tell me what they think and stand by it than have it be all over the road. And that was Murdoch. That was one of those things that kind of, you got what you saw. There was not a whole lot of difference between Dick Murdoch, the worker, and Dick Murdoch, the man.
Now, shortly after that, and starting in 1987, you started working for the WWF on and off for the next few years. How did that come about, you starting to work for them, and what were your thoughts of Vince McMahon?
I don't have anything bad to say about Vince. I tell people the same story every time because it's the truth. I just picked up the phone, called the office, got Terry Garvin, asked for a job. It was just that cut and dry, plain and simple. And they gave me a look and kept me around for a while. Vince gets a lot of bad rap, and I'm sure he's earned some of it. But how do you become a millionaire in any business if you haven't made somebody mad somewhere? I don't know how it's possible. Because if you're trying to get to that point, there's always going to be somebody else trying to do exactly the same thing, and they're going to cut your throat if they have to. And usually, my experience, the ones that do the loudest griping are the ones that just didn't quite get there first.
Now, while you were there, you were pretty much used as enhancement talent. And me personally, I've always felt that enhancement talent is often more talented than the wrestlers that they face. Because pretty much as an enhancement talent, you have to make the quote-unquote superstars look good. And, you were definitely one of the best at that. That's how you'll stick around doing it for so long. What are your feelings on that philosophy?
In some cases, you're right. Because the top guys were never going to work towards me. They were never going to worry about what I could or couldn't do, my strengths, my weaknesses. It was getting them over, which is what I stayed to do. I had to be the one that was concerned with what not to do or what to do, how, why, that sort of thing. And if you want to stick around any amount of time, it does become, as you said, a necessity. I don't know if being a better worker is isn't really the word, but or the term. But you have to get to a point to where you're definitely adaptable.
Okay, now I'm going to go ahead and try and get this call online again. Hopefully,
all
right. Hello, caller from 405. Can you hear me? Hello, caller. You're on the air? Maybe I just won't go back to them. That happens sometimes. The joys of live radio. Around 1991 was when you left the WWF. What were the circumstances around that? 93, I'm sorry.
About 93. Yeah. Basically, it just got to where we weren't making a whole lot of money, comparatively speaking, to what we had been. And on a personal level, it's kind of hard to justify to the family when you're just not bringing a whole lot more home than if you were working what was left of the territories at the time. And beyond that, it was just beginning to get time. It was, even though I could always use the paydays and so on, I had just about outlived my usefulness there, so to speak, without some sort of complete and total repackaging and an investment that wasn't going to happen for me, and for obvious reasons, I knew it. It just was time. I mean, that's the only way to put it. It was just time to go.
So was there ever any, not at this, because you're currently working as Doink the Clown, was when you first debuted in the WWF, was there any talk about you doing that?
I did it a little bit on the rare occasion when you needed somebody to fill in a spot type thing, because there were times where he had, you know, 2, 3, 4 Doinks in the towns all over the country.
Right.
You didn't quite have all the internet that you have today. You didn't have all the kayfabe sheets. People really didn't know that there was a clown in every one of Vince's towns that night. And so there would be. He was good about keeping it as far as the same guy on TV, whether it was Matt or Apollo or whoever. But when it came time to go to the town and you had Doink on the card, he had a Doink there, one way or another.
Yeah, there was times where there was like 7 or 8 Doinks, and it was there was times that I'm in when there was like 7 or 8 Doinks that would come out, and yeah, you know, as a fan, I was just like, seriously?
Well, it was a hot gimmick at the time, beautiful for a short time, and like anything else, if it's what's making a little bit of money in this business, they don't ride it until that horse is dead.
Right. Yeah, it definitely, they had a couple good years with the character. Now,
it was one of those, once they turned his baby face, they pretty much doomed it. As long as they worked it as a heel, the clown, I use it kind of an abstract term there, but that was where the money was. Because it shocks me to this day just how many people are actually definitely afraid of clowns. They want to hate a clown. And as long as he was the evil clown, there was money to be made.
Yeah, I definitely thought the evil clown was best because you saw him, you know, making the little kids cry, and it was much more effective than him as a baby face.
Exactly. You only got so much. How much can you do with a baby face clown when you got a guy that you package as a killer? It just doesn't work. Whereas you package the clown as a killer, now you got something.
Right. That's the only time in wrestling history where someone can be evil by pouring a bucket of water on somebody's head.
Yes, thank you. And they knew it. It's just that at that point, business had gotten bad. If it was going to sell some merchandise, if it was going to sell a couple pay-per-view buys, by God, that's what they were going to do. And then worry about the next day.
Now, in the mid-90s, you started working part-time for WCW for a couple of years. What was the locker room atmosphere like in WCW?
It was a different world there. that place definitely, you know, you hear those stories about how inmates run the asylum. That was that place. Everybody was there for themselves, and they knew the money was being thrown around, they were there to make theirs.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you started there in 95, which was after Hulk Hogan was there.
I'll talk about that. That'd be about right, because my youngest, if he wasn't born yet, he hit here shortly after I started there, and he was born in 96. So, yeah, that's about right.
And it's funny, that was right after Hulk Hogan got there, and I guess not long before Kevin Nash and Scott Hall and guys like that started showing up. So it was,
right. Yeah, in that time period, yes.
A lot of people say that was sort of the beginning of the end period, so far as the locker room line, at least.
Unfortunately, yeah, because that's when it just got out of hand. You know, Bischoff was a mark for all those guys, and he had a billionaire's checkbook. He didn't care.
That was actually my next question, was your thoughts on Eric Bischoff.
He's a cancer to me. I haven't seen him do a damn thing that was beneficial to the business, worthwhile to the business outside of making money for some people for that period of time. Some of what we complain about today as far as they have to give away everything on TV, there's no continuity to the TV because they have to hotshot everything and push it for now. We can't save it for later. That was Eric Bischoff. That was his mentality. I can pop ratings tonight. That's all I'm concerned with. I'll worry about next week. It showed in their booking before it got, you know, too far along into the Bischoff run there. You can see them almost grasping for straw at times. He was tremendous at that. I always call it the Bischoff moment, whether it's for lack of a better term, where you can get that moment on TV where you went, ooh, that was great. Ooh, that was cool. Ooh, who's next? You never left yourself anything for next week.
It almost seemed, as a fan at that time, that it was almost pointless to have a pay-per-view because all they really cared about was, you know, the Monday night show and beating WWE in the ratings, whereas, you know, why would, if I'm seeing the exact same thing on Monday for free, why would I pay $30, $40 for the pay-per-view?
Which goes right to what I was just saying about he was great at getting that moment right now, getting that idea that you're going to watch just to see what happens next. But you never left yourself anything to follow. And you just said it. There was no reason to watch the pay-per-view because then he'd given it all to you on the Nitro in order to try to beat Vince.
Right. I always think back to the night. I always think back to the night when they brought Ric Flair back and they reformed the Four Horsemen, and that was the night after a pay-per-view where, you know, if you're going to do something, you should have done it on the pay-per-view so people would pay to see that.
Well, that's not something that you... Thank you. Thank you. Exactly. I mean, there's no other thing to say, except you're right. You don't give that one away on free TV. You can bring it back out on the free TV, but you make it obvious that people you didn't spend your money to see my pay-per-view last night. If you don't pay your money to see my pay-per-view next month or 2 months from now, how often he was running them at that time, what else are you going to miss? He never did anything of that nature. And when people catch on, and people catch on, they do. Why spend it when they're paying whatever it is per month for cable? There's just no need. Bischoff's going to give it to him anyway.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess the answer to my next question is, you would much rather work for Vince McMahon than Eric Bischoff.
Oh, much definitely. For whatever bad can be said about Vince, or whatever true can be said about Vince and egos, et cetera, et cetera. Vince liked making money, whereas Bischoff liked looking like he was the smartest man in the room.
Right, that's
the
Bischoff.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, back to Bischoff, yeah, he made a lot of money, but he made a lot of money for Ted Turner, who, I mean, I'm sure a lot of times he didn't even notice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if I work for a man that's all about making money, the money's going to find its way to me. Maybe not enough, maybe not as much, but it's going to find its way to me. If I'm working for a guy that he's more into his ego, where does the money stop if there is any? And that was, you know, I caught on to that. I stayed part-time for about 3 years, but I caught on to the fact that I had already hit my glass ceiling. I was going to hit there, and it was going to end sooner or later because the egos were going to destroy it.
Well, yeah, I guess you left in 98 and 99 where it was definitely...
99 sounds about right, you know.
In 99 was definitely when it was on its way. I know that was when it was on its way downhill.
Oh, yeah, easily by then. Whenever they beat Goldberg, 1-2-3, they were not from that point forward.
I was in the arena that night.
I couldn't tell you the specific night, but I remember that they had nothing else. He was carrying the company at the time. Whether he was worthwhile in the ring, whether he was handed to him, all the bad things you could say about him, bottom line was he was carrying the company. He earned what he was making because he was carrying the company. And when those big egos decide, well, it's time to beat him, the company's done. There's nobody left to put that saddle on.
Yeah, and they never really did him any favors with having him chase and then doing all those stupid storylines with all these different people and, you know, having him team up with Dwayne Bruce from the Power Plant, and they never really did anything to kind of give that back to him.
Well, it's just like the Frankenstein monster or any other monster you've seen in the movies. Once you kill the monster, what have you got left?
Yeah.
Even if it's the babyface monster, what's left? They killed it. There's no bringing it back. The Power Plant guys weren't going to do anything for him because... Hell, he knew less than they did, truthfully. So there was nothing there. You might possibly have been able to get something back on him that would never been the same had you given him Nash, Hall, somebody like that, over a period of time, and done it as well. Not as correctly as they did it when they were building it the first time. Maybe. And, of course, you know, we're 10 years later, hindsight's 20/20. But that's the only thing that they could have done.
Now, if I remember right, the next thing they did with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash was they went into, which made no sense, going into a feud with Rey Mysterio where they were trying to get his mask off, where, you know, he went from Goldberg to that. And it just didn't make a lot of sense to me.
No. I mean, WCW had some good minds at times that could have done really tremendous business with, especially the talent that they had. And they showed flashes of it with things like the building of Goldberg, Jericho, when he was red hot. There's a couple of things, if I was to sit here and think long enough, that they showed the flashes of someone somewhere had a clue. But those that had the final say, so the final power, just didn't care.
Now, I've always felt that giving a wrestler the booking control is just a recipe for disaster. Because in that time, Nash had the book, a lot, Hulk Hogan had the book. What are your feelings about that?
Nay. It's like anything else. It's the individual. You give it to a guy that... goes back to the money versus ego. If you give it to a guy that's in the ring that likes to make money, even though he's going to feed his ego some, it's just guaranteed because he protects himself, he's still going to do just that, make money for the most part. You give it to a guy that's more worried about his ego, you set it yourself like you're just creating a recipe for disaster. How do you know? Past records. That's the only way you can go by it.
Now, at one time in your career also, you worked with the Rock and Roll Express quite a bit. Do you have any memories of working with them?
Oh, those two guys are tremendous, Bucky and Hooter. They're night off. You got to have your shoes off. You know, you're going to go. but they're tremendous. There's no way to not understand why they were so over there for a 4 or 5 year period. Once you've been in the ring with them, they were just unbelievable.
Now, do you have any memories of your time in some of the Mexican promotions, like AAA and EMLL?
I hate Mexico. I'll tell that to anybody. It's such a racist place to begin with, and it has nothing to do with wrestling. It's just the country itself. You can make some decent money in Mexico if you didn't stay. If you stayed, they began to think of you as a commodity. They began to think of you as just another piece of the machine, and you were doomed unless you really made them some good money, like a Vampiro or Norman Smiley. And even those guys got the knife between the shoulder blades before it was over. The crowds, they stand out. I mean, it's just nuts down there as far as the crowds go. But as far as doing business, I hate it. I hate living in the country. It's a third world country. I'm 150 miles from it. It's like going into another world.
Now, we talked a little bit about Doink earlier. How did you come to start playing the character of Doink the Clown?
I filled in the spot here and there. Never really thought much about it. And then a couple of places overseas were, can you do it? And, well, I might as well. And if they say something about maybe in, you know, the big office, we'll worry about it then. Otherwise, let's make some money. And that's how it started.
And what are your thoughts on
so
movies?
So much of my career has been a lot simpler looking back than it might seem for a number of reasons. One of them simply is the business itself, the structure, the way everything was done was simpler then. And another reason is on a personal level, I've always just tried to keep things simpler because I can always get more done. The less complicated, the easier it is to get things done. That's in life, period. And I can honestly say, you know, contracts and all that stuff and all the agreements and, you know, it was a phone call in my day, a handshake, that sort of thing. And it just made life easier. And I see these guys today, I tell them I made a phone call from LAX to the New York office. Will you look at me? Give me a chance. That was it. I didn't go to any clinic. I didn't go to any tryout. I didn't go to any of that other bullshit that they do today. I didn't eat their diet. I didn't watch their videos. I didn't do any of that. I made a phone call. It went from there. The guys today, it doesn't exist for them, so there's no way for them to grasp it. And it's sad, really. But like I say, just so much of my career was a phone call, a handshake, and that was it.
Now, what are your thoughts on the recent passing of Luna Vachon? Did you get a chance to know Luna?
Yeah, that one hurt. There was a time period for about 10 years we were pretty close. In and out of New York, Puerto Rico, here. She wrestled here quite a bit. I guess I'm hoping that now that she's passed, that the demons are gone too. I mean, I'll leave it at that. I don't want to go any deeper than that. She was a sweetheart to me. That one hurt.
We'll be doing a tribute show on her, so if you want to come on, definitely just let us know, and we can take an interview.
Let me know. I mean, she's one of those that, nah, I just want to go further, just beyond the fact that, I don't know. I don't want to go any further than she was a sweetheart to me.
Okay. Do you have a rib or a road story that you could share with our listeners?
A what?
Like a rib or a road story?
For Luna?
No, just a general.
Just a general. God,
maybe a little funny rib that happened to you that you pulled on somebody.
Oh, there were hundreds of them. The ribs don't happen anymore because, first of all, the guys can't take them. And second of all, we're not on the road like we were. You know, three to a car, three to a room. So it's just not there. there was all kinds of, there was always something. Some of the territories were horrible, you know, padlocks on the bags, flip-flops super glued to the ceiling, rubber snakes for guys who were scared of snakes. I mean, you know, we could go on and on. It was constant. There was always something. We had to relieve the boredom somehow. It's fine. I mean, I've seen guys get run out of wrestling because Tushy Joe was scared of snakes. Also, we found out he was scared of snakes. The kid's like first, second match ever is in Kansas City. And the locker room was situated, there was a big wall between the showers and had two entrances on either end of the big wall. And the wall didn't go all the way to the ceiling. And me and Jim Eddie had just found out that Joe was definitely afraid of snakes. Well, I can't remember if it was me or Marty that bought the rubber snake, but we did, because between the two of us, it was one of those we were going to point the finger at each other anyway. And he's in the shower with this kid, and then the kid is greener than a gourd, and hopefully all were my time. They're in there getting cleaned up, and I'll own up to the snake, I'm the one who threw the snake over the wall. And when I did, it didn't just hit the floor, it hit Joe, and then it hit the floor. He beat the hell out of that poor kid to get out of the shower. It was bad. And I don't think that kid ever set foot in a wrestling building again. You know, that's one of the bad ones that you kind of feel bad about. But 20-something years later, it is funny. It's because of the screaming and the hollering, and everybody that's having heart attacks, and oh my God, and if I could find my gun, I'm going to kill, and well, we better get out of here before he finds his gun, and you know, what's going on? We're not going to tell you till tomorrow, that sort of thing. It was chaos. And 25 years later, it's funnier than as funny as can be. But at that moment, that poor guy, he took the brunt of it, and you feel bad on that part. But yeah, that was one of the better ones. You just sitting there, not really doing much of anything, and all of a sudden, it just all breaks loose.
Well, one of our co-hosts, Gary Wolf, told us a story one time about Owen Hart. Glued his boots to the floor, so he had to go out there in Japan and wrestle barefoot.
Yeah, guys would do it all the time, or like I said, the flip-flops get super glued to the floor, or the ceiling. everybody's bag would be a big logging chain with a padlock to the heater or to some other pipe in the building. There's no way you're going to get it without a bolt cutter. It got so bad with padlocks and Ron Rich in Kansas City at one time that Bob Brown got to where he was carrying bolt cutters. Because you never knew when his bag was going to be padlocked, or his shoes were going to be padlocked, or the hood ornament on his car was going to be padlocked, the door handle to his Cadillac was going to be padlocked. He didn't, so he got to wear carry bolt cutters. That's how bad Ron Rich got with the padlock. And we were running so many high school gyms, he had an endless supply of padlocks that he, of course, had no combination or key to.
Now, do you have any upcoming bookings or anything you want to plug for our listeners?
Well, I've got a show here tonight right outside San Antonio, a little town of Lytle. I'm really not that busy right now. I'm gearing down. I'm done in December. I'm hanging them up. It'll be right at 30 years when I finally do walk in there, you know, the last time and learn. There's not really a whole lot of I'm pushing. I got a few shows, and the only reason I'm waiting until then is I'm just keeping commitments that I've made till then. The body's given out. I went back to college and started teaching at college, and that's working out. And combined with the body falling apart, it's time. There's no reason to stick around and chance even a worse injury.
Okay, so it looks like you got your tie on. On behalf of all the fans, I just want to say thank you for all your years. And is there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, yeah, I still got the book out. I wrote it a little over a year ago. Came out a little over a year ago. It's a different look at wrestling because obviously I was never the big star and never the big man in territory, whatever. But I made most of the territories, made the two big offices. I've probably been overseas now 30 different trips. You know, and all that's solely off of who I am and what I could do. And I kind of put that in the book, you know, Journal of Journeyman. It's out there. Amazon, WrestlingRyanOnline.com, both. Past that, no, I don't really have anything to plug. It's just done. enjoy the fact that I've had a good career, had a good life because of my career, and now it's time to move on into a different stage of life.
What's the name of the book? No, we can just plug it on our press releases and things like that.
Yeah, it's Journal of a Journeyman. It's on WrestlingRiotOnline.com and it's at Amazon.com both.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on today, Dusty.
Ah, I appreciate it.
No problem. And again, thanks a lot. And best of luck in the last couple months of your career.
All right. Well, thank you.
And that was Dusty Wolf. That was definitely a great interview there. Go to commercial and we'll come back and I'll talk about a little bit of wrestling news. So.
This is Teddy Boy Beck Summers. You're listening to Falls Count Radio.
Hi, that was Doug Summers, who was on our show this past Wednesday. Also, we recently filmed and recorded an interview with him for the Skandor Akbar tribute show, which will be coming soon. Also, at some point, we'll be having a Luna Vachon tribute show. So, definitely be looking out for that. Unfortunately, it seems like we're doing a lot of tribute shows these days. There's still a little bit of wrestling news that's going on, but now we have a few minutes here. Looks like WWE's releasing season 3 of NXT, and there's some speculation that guys like Idle Stevens, Bo Rotunda, Ricky Steamboat, Wes Briscoe, Mason Ryan, guys like that in developmental could be there. Also seems like there's a chance that there will be some divas in there, like Oksana, AJ Lee, Viviana, or Naomi Knight. So looks like there's that's coming. Again, this is definitely a tough couple of days. In addition to everything else, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, it appears that Scott Hall is not in the best of health. For all of our fans, try to keep Scott Hall in your thoughts and prayers. Of course, that's the big news is the recent deaths. We lost three wrestlers this week. All in one day, actually, which is a little bit unfortunate. So, lost Luna Vachon, of course. Lost Tony Bourne. And it's just very unfortunate because it just seems like it's happening all at once. It wasn't that long ago that we lost Trent Acid, lost Lance Cade, Skandor Akbar. Not a really good time. If you want to call in, the number is 718-664-9835. Again, that's 718-664-9835. See if there's any other noteworthy news going on. Gold Dust have a book coming out, so that should be interesting. Dustin Rhodes' relationship with Dusty Rhodes has been very tumultuous over the years. So there should be some interesting stuff there. It's like WWE has finally confirmed Serena's release. I guess they wanted to wait till her last taping aired. I spoke a few minutes earlier about how Scott Hall's not doing so well. Here's what came from his publicist, and this is on MySpace. I believe it was yesterday. She says, "Well, once again, I've come to put an end to the BS and assumption of others. Why in heaven's name would anyone think Scott is seriously ill just because I said keep him in your thoughts and prayers? He's in a place, he's getting help. Doesn't mean the road will be easy. He is dealing with much. He is making life-changing changes. Old habits are hard to break. I said, when I know you will, but until then I wish people would not take things out of context and assume the worst. I still ask that you keep him in your thoughts and prayers that he will come out of this healthy and happy. After all, we just want the bad guy to be okay." And, I mean, it was noted earlier in the week by Kevin Nash, who is, of course, one of Scott Hall's best friends, that Scott had checked into a rehabilitation center on behalf of WWE's Talent Wellness Program. He was actually recently scratched from an indie show. But, you know, hopefully Scott Hall can get himself right. He's kind of a little up there in years, so he's not definitely seen him in the ring again. But, you know, it's been several years that he's just been a wreck. And, you know, I think I speak on behalf of all the other wrestling fans that we want to see a healthy Scott Hall. Talking a little bit earlier about how they were cancer in the locker room in WCW when we were speaking with them. When we were speaking with Dusty. Looks like Monday Night's Raw, which is the 900th episode of Raw, there'll be a lot of historical names coming by. So they haven't specified any names, but WWE has acknowledged that there will be some big names showing up, so that should definitely be an interesting show. So, again, we're going to close up the show here, and, you know, we lost three different people this week, especially Luna Vachon. I was at a show last night. They did a 10-bell salute for Luna, but they didn't really mention anything about the other names that had passed, so, you know, I thought that was, they should have at least mentioned that, but, you know, that's kind of beside the point. But, you know, we lost a few people this week, so we're going to close up with a 10-bell salute, and, everyone have a great day, and we have a great show coming up on Wednesday. Not sure, quite sure who the guest is at this point, but if you guys just keep on logging on to falsecountradio.com, join the Facebook page. Definitely also check out Gimmicks Wrestling Tees. You know, they're a friend of the show, so it's worth it. You can follow them on Gimmicks 24/7. Or they actually have a web page. You can also email them at gimmicks247@gmail.com. And the website is gimmickswrestlingtees.bigcartel.com. You know, why take a sign that they can take away from you at the show when you can't take away your T-shirt? So, definitely someone to check out. So, you know, we're going to close up now with that $10 salute, and everyone have a good rest of your week.
Revolved around one boy, one girl. they were standing there in the front.